This is 48 from the series, the story of Amnon and Tamar, children of David, and found in, mostly in Parak Yud Gimel in Shmuel Bez. One of the more despicable and inexplicable acts that we find in Tanakh. On one level, it's hard to understand. On another level, it's all too human. It's Musar about sin and human nature, and yet it's also symptomatic of the personal difficulties that afflicted David HaMelech as king, especially in the aftermath of the sin with Bathsheba. Let's look at number three. See how Chazal approached the subject. The Bar Megillah says about Chofen and Bez. Masay Amnon and Tamar Nitzim and Targay. Mishnah said it's not enough to explain. The episode of Amnon and Tamar is read and explained. Maybe we'll think we'll be Jose for David's honor that this happened to his children. Kumash Malon, that we're not. Okay? So now the Gemara says, I missed the mem. Maisha David the Amnon lo nikrin v'lo mitargamin. The episode of David Amnon is neither read nor explained. The Amrit Maisha Amnon the Tamar nikrin mitargamin. But we just said it is read and explained. Lo kasha. Hodesiv Amnon ben David. Hodesiv Amnon stama. To refer to the event as Amnon, so we speak about it. Amnon ben David, it's too much of an offense to David HaMelech to make mention of it. Background, so after everything, Acharei Kiflos HaKol, with the Uriah and Bathsheba and their child who died, and the birth of Shlomo, all of which took place against the backdrop of the war with Ammon, eventually at the end of Perek Yud-Bez, David himself goes and conquers Ammon, and he takes the king's crown for himself, puts it on his own head, and he takes spoils, and he takes captives, and he puts them at hard labor as an intimidation to other surrounding tribes and nations as a deterrent, and in fact it works. And now our story begins. It's number one. Vayefrechein, after this battle, Ula Avshalom ben David achos yafra usmah tamar. Avshalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister, and her name was Tamar. Amnon was David's Bechor. As we learned earlier in the Sefer, his mother was Achinoam. He was David's first child. Who was Tamar? Who was Absalom? So they were David's children, but from Macha. Now Macha was the Ephatar. You turn the page and look at 14, and so look at 11. We'll keep going back and forth to this. It's the Gemara which deals with the case. It's in Sanhedrin, Daf Chof Aleph, Amud Aleph. Omer Avira Marav, Tamar Bas Yifat Tor Haisa. Tamar was the daughter of Yifat Tor. Yifat Tor, briefly we know, is a woman, who's non-Jewish woman, who's taken captive by a Jewish soldier on the field of battle. And according to the law of the Torah, at the beginning of Tisei, that's Machlokes Rishonim, but let's assume for our purposes here, the soldier in question is allowed to live with her one time, and then he has to separate from her, and she undergoes a process of withdrawal, let her hair grow, let her nails grow, to become unattractive to him. If she wants to stay, wants to convert, then she converts, becomes a regular wife. So Tamar was the daughter of Yifat Tor, which means, we'll get back to this a little while, which means that technically her mother was not Jewish when she was conceived. And therefore, she was converted, and as such would be eligible to marry another one of David's children. But let's continue the story, and we'll see what happens. Vayehozeh Amnon ben David. Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Vayetze la'amnon l'shalos bavur tamar achoso, kitzulohi. Amnon became lovesick. He lusted after Tamar, to the point that literally became ill. Vayipalei b'aynei Amnon la'asot shlom u'umo. But it was impossible for Amnon to do anything about it. Nothing more painful than unrequited love. Of course, there are other factors here as well. And part of it is that the status of Tamar is not fully known. Now, let's just go back. I mentioned one point. Mark continues. It's the cinema. When he finally came upon her, she said, "Don't do this. Talk to the king. The king will not prevent me from marrying you." Why? If we would think she's eligible to marry Amnon, how could she marry her? How could she marry him? She is his sister. It must be that she was the daughter of Yefastar. Rashi explains in 14, Achos Avshalom Bas Yefastar Haishah. Kodem Shin is Gaira Balei Sholem. She was the daughter of Yefastar before she was converted sincerely. Macha Imo Yodolo Ledovid Es Tamar. Macha, her mother gave birth to her to David. So Haishah Slobatar Yefastar. So that was the status of Yefastar. And then she stayed Macha, became David's wife. There's some complications. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos number 16, it's the Gemara, it's still in Sanhedrin, says at the end, Al ken yir lemeimah de tamar lo haisho bas dovid. Se'imo tar haisho muberes kishe bas lo milchamo. Tosfos concludes for a variety of reasons that Tamar was not David's daughter at all, but rather he adopted her and raised her. But Macha, when David lived with her on the battlefield, was already pregnant with Tamar, another father. She's another father, another mother, so therefore she's technically a stranger to Amnon, notwithstanding they grew up in the same house. It's a Woody Allen scenario almost. In the same house, but they're not really related to each other. She, because she grew up in the palace and was raised by David as a daughter, so she's construed as a princess. What happens, unfortunately, is, I suppose, a fatal attraction. He became very ill, Amnon, couldn't do anything about it. Ul Amnon Rea, back in number one, Amnon had a friend, Ushmo Yonadov and Shema Achi David. His name was Yonadov, the son of Shema David's brother. So in fact, Yonadov and Amnon were first cousins. The Yonadav is Chacham Me'od. Yonadav was a very wise person. As the Gemara continues, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yudah Marav, is Chacham Lirishah. He was wise in his evil, meaning he was clever. He was sinister. He knew how to manipulate the system. Is Chacham Me'od, but Lirishah. What did he do? Vayom Elo, so Yonadav said to Amnon, Madua to kocha gal. Why are you so downtrodden, so depressed? Ben Amelech, you're the son of a king. Baboker, baboker, morning after morning. Hello, Tagidli, tell me what's on your mind. Vayom elo Amnon, Amnon said to him, Es tamar achos Avshalom, ochi ani oheb. I love Avshalom, I love Tamar, the sister of Avshalom. Now, he calls Avshalom ochi. Because in fact, according to Rashi, they're the same father. Different mothers, the same father. So they're natural brothers. According to Rashi, Tamar, though, being a Bas Yefastar, was therefore not halachically a child of David. And therefore, even though they would have had the same father, they could marry each other since he was non-Jewish at the time of the conception and birth. Tosfos maintains entirely she wasn't even David's natural, the biological child. It's not an issue altogether. What could we do? Vayom elo Yonadav chav al mishkavcho v'hischo. He gave him this advice. Lie in bed and pretend that you're sick. Uvo bichol yosecho. Your father David will come to see you. But my toilad, you'll say to him, Tavona Tamar Choti, let my sister Tamar come, V'tavreni Lechem, let her prepare some food for me, V'atusol le'enai etabirya, so make a meal in front of me, L'man asher ereh, V'achalti miyado, so I may see her and eat from her hand. So Yonadav presented this solution to David. Why did he say it? Motivation is good, motivation is bad. Most of Chazal and the Gemara assumes it was Lishah. It was to give Amnon a pretext to get Tamar into his chamber and do what he wanted. The Malbim has a different approach. The Malbim says in 9, the bottom of the first page, the Malbim says, "L'matzei lo." Savona Tamara Koshi, Benet Lo Olal Das Yonadov Seyasa Hanivola Zov. Really, Yonadov did not have in mind that Amnon should rape Tamar. Rak Som Batib Zvarov, Sini Tokom Yakir Amelech, Shil Choshev to Tamara Koshi. Vichol Avura Admavet. Yonadov suggested, the Malvin says, put in David's head that you're so attracted to Tamar, so drawn to her, it goes away. That he'll see to it that you marry her. And therefore, nothing will be untoward or offensive. And he'll give her to you as a wife, since she is permissible to you. Okay. That was Yonadav's plan. Now, part of the problem inherent in the plan, of course, was Tamar's consent. Tamar raised in the house of David. David, for all the things that we read in Navi, is David HaMelech, means nearest Israel. So it was the holy environment in which he was raised. Go back to number 4, and look, this is on Pasuk Bey, that he became sick, lovesick for Tamar, he was Sulahi, she was a virgin. So Radak says, L'ficha chosak bo cheshek yoser chazot. He desired her because she was pristine. She had no suitors at all. The Yesh Mephorshim to come Lemilas Vayipolei Beinei Amon. Some say that's why the word Vayipolei, which means astonished or difficult or here impossible. Afal Pishu Asa Bachano, even though he did what he did, Kloma, Nislo Beinov Hadavar. It was a puzzle to him, a conundrum that could not be resolved. How would he be able to sleep with Tamar? She never left the house. She was a virgin. The way of the maidens of Israel, they stay modestly in the home, certainly the princesses. They don't come out. She was diabolically clever. So it wasn't just accommodating Amnon that was Yonadav's plan. He had to devise a method whereby Tamar will be lured out of the palace and seclude herself with Amnon. That was his plan that he suggested. V'chein hoyo. By Yishkav Amnon, he lay down. By Yishkol, he pretended to be ill. The king came to look after his older son. Amnon said to the king, Tavona Tamar Chosi, let Tamar, my sister, come. Let her prepare 2 latkes, and I'll eat out of her hand. That's interesting. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk. I didn't cite it here. The Gemara says that she fried these latkes for him. Why? A week early for Hanukkah. Why did she fry and not cook? Why did he ask for fried food and not cooked food? The Mepharshim explained, what's that? No. The Mepharshim explained that cooked food, let's say she cooked it in the palace and brought it to him, it would be cold. But she could do that, because cooked food stays hot longer. But fried food cools off very quickly. Tzedakah asked for fried food, because this is he'd have to cook in his presence. Vayishlach David al Tamar Abayisla Leymar, so David sent a message to Tamar back in the palace. L'chino beis Amnon achir, v'asilo abeyo. Go to your brother Amnon and make a meal for him, a light meal. V'telech Tamar, Pasuk says, beis Amnon achir, u'shochev. So she went to the chamber of Amnon, her brother, and he's lying down. V'tikachos abosei, v'tolos. She took the dough and she kneaded it, batzalabez b'einov, and she cooked it in his sight, batzibaseh l'chelavivos, and she prepared the latkes for him. Batzitachas ha-masreis batzitzok l'chonov, then she took the pan, frying pan, poured it before him, v'yama'im l'chol, and he refused to eat. V'yomer Amnon, Amnon said, hotziu cholish me'alai, remove everybody from here, I want to be alone with her. And everybody left, all his attendants. Yeah, he's the, they call that? Crown Prince. He's the Crown Prince. Bring the meal into my room. And I'll consume it. I'll eat it from your hand. He did. He didn't suspect anything. Tamar is very chaste, very modest. That's how she was raised. In retrospect, maybe. But it's her brother too, right? It's her brother also. But she kach tamar talavivos asher asosro, and she took the latkes that she made, latovei l'amnon alchia hachedra, and she brought it to Amnon, her brother, to his room. But she dach elov lechol, so then he approached in order to eat, v'yachazekva, and he grabbed her. V'yomer what he said to her, Boi shikri miyachosi, come and sleep with me, my sister. Batomelo, and she said to him, Alochi, no, my brother, al ta'aneni, don't rape me, don't violate me. Ki lo ye'asachem b'Yisrael, such a thing should not be done in Israel. Al ta'aseya tanavolo hazos, don't commit this abomination. Vani, for me, ono olifas herpasi, where will I then go with my shame? And you'll be considered as one of the lowlives in Israel. Speak to the king, the Pesach Gemara quoted. The king will not prevent you from marrying me, or prevent me from marrying you. The king will endorse it. So please do that. The low of all is Shema de Kolo. He refused to listen to her. He grabbed her, and he forcibly violated her. Amnon literally was possessed. There's no doubt about it. He was possessed by a compulsion that he could not control, swept away by what in his own mind was love, and he was impervious to her importunings or her reasoning. Now, the Abadmanel says in 5, she used 3 arguments to try to dissuade him from attacking her. It's Pasuket Beis. V'rotzto bozel says, Gimel tainos chazvatos l'sh'ein roi lasosa. 3 reasons why it's not fitting for him to do it. Hechod mipas ha-masa, the deed itself. Sheini mipas klogo, her honor. Shlishi mipas klogo, his honor. And that's what the Pasuk says. In mipas ha-masa omro, in terms of the act itself, Awachi, al paneni. The act itself is an abhorrent one. It's repugnant. Alright? Vuhu nema bitmios. The answer is almost disingenuously. Kiilu omra v'chim cho'achi. Am I not your brother? Halo achi ato. Lochein en roi shitaneni. You're my brother. Therefore, it's not fit that a brother should rape a sister. Such a thing should not be done amongst the Jewish people. That was the first argument, that the act itself is on its face repulsive. Then, if I go, she said, what's going to happen to me beneath my honor as a princess of Israel to be subjected to this type of treatment? Hine Yesod Bechinas Karpasu, there's me to consider. Why would you do this to me if in fact he professed this love for me? And third, it's not Lufi Chavodcha to do such a thing. Vatot Tiek Achad Hanavalim Yisrael. You, the crown prince, will be acting as one of the low lives in Israel. So in fact, for a young woman put on the spot, she made a very compelling case, because she used every possible argument that would appeal to him. It's awful, it's despicable inherently. Think about me. If you loved me, you wouldn't do this, because I'll just be ashamed. And third, about you. How could you do such a thing? It's not for Fichlodcha. Nonetheless, doesn't mention the king. Well, that was what the prophet says. That she said, talk to the king. The king is not going to prevent you from marrying me. Now, it's interesting that today, you know, the modern approach is to perceive rape as a crime of violence, as a power, and not at all a crime of sexual lust. All right, best known in the aversion to the comment, inappropriate in any event, that, you know, the women bring it on themselves by dressing provocatively. There was a time, the 40s and 50s and 60s, where that was the norm. And in fact, when police would investigate the case, or a rapist would be tried, that would be a factor. That would be evidence in the case. How provocative the woman was dressed. By the 70s, that fell out of favor. So much so that today it's considered irrelevant and immaterial how a woman dressed, because it's held almost as a matter of course that has nothing to do with lust and has to do with power and violence. But like anything else that exists in modern life, it's not entirely true. Violence would mean you attack someone, period, with a gun, a knife, this, etc. When you rape someone, it's a sign of sexual violence. So there is some aspect of lust involved, but it's in a certain context. It's an aggression that has a sexual component. Now that she recognized here, that's what Pasuk is telling us. That she recognized that she is going to be forced, so she's using arguments to deflect both his aggressive desires, it's not what he's slow for, as well as his sexual desires. He lo yinayini hantmi mecha, the king is not going to prevent you. So in fact, if you love me, you desire me as a wife, desire even just to live with me, and there's a way to do it for her to her. Maybe we can stop her. So in fact, she recognized, and she's implicit at least, both components. The sexual aspect as well as the aggressive aspect, which today, if I could look, was denied in the world. He did what he did. What's the result? So now you have one of the most fascinating phenomena that of course lives on in our literature. In several different ways. By Yisnoeh Amnon Shinoge de Olomeod, Amnon, right afterwards, he loved her passionately before, right after he raped her, he hated her, Shinoge de Olomeod, with a great hatred. He did the Loha Tsuna, Sheshneo, Me'ava, She'aiva. The hatred with which he hated her was stronger than the love with which he loved her. Vayom Elo Amnon, Kumi Lechi. Amnon said to her, get up and go. Now the Gemara puts it into a somewhat graphic context, back in number 11, in Sanhedrin Chof Aleph Amid Aleph, Vayishna Amnon Shnugged Olo Me'od, who hated with a great hatred, my Taima, Omer of Yitzchok, Nima Nikshir Olo, Vasato Kusofo. That during the act of violence, she was able, with one of her hairs, to dismember him. So he was wounded as a result, almost castrated, and therefore that's why, because of the physical violence, that she was able to perpetuate on him, or perpetrate on him rather, in order to try to keep him away, even unsuccessfully, so that's why he hated her. He hated her because of the resistance. That's what the Gemara says, and you know, the Gemara stands on its own. It certainly is true, and it fits in with the Pesukim. But there's obviously something here that is even more than that. The Rabbah says it's the number 10. The Rabbah seems to indicate, I'm sorry, well, the Rabbah is number 6, that she resisted. Yid Mershin is Atma Kesiyacholta Lachaloto Rishono. It seems clear that she utilized all her strength in order to resist his will. The Ulai Hechiva Hazatmos, and maybe she pained him, she grieved him through this resistance, Shreveinayim, which in fact the Gemara says, or Omnolo Dudre Cherpus, where she embarrassed him, shamed him, as you know, God forbid happens, scream at the person, insult. The Ulazer Sano, that's why he hated her. She already said to him, you'd be a novel, you'd be a lowlife, contemptible. So in fact, if she said to him, if you do this, you'll be contemptible. And he did. She's a lowlife. He is contemptible. She said even worse things to him. Because of the abundance of hosha that he had, Amnon now sent her out of the house in a degrading way. The measure of hatred is not to speak at all to anyone. Sigmar goes different area that we define an oyev, an enemy, as a person who doesn't speak to someone for 3 days intentionally. So much so that if that person kills the shogeg, we assume it wasn't the shogeg, because it starts as lower as well. But even speak is talking later on about Absalom and Amnon. But that is a different point in 10. Zos hasina hoysosiba meis Hashem kidevahandil acheba b'shochos amideisel. This hatred was almost divinely inspired, that Amnon should hate her, so to increase the shame and increase the animosity of Absalom to Amnon. The Absalom Yosef Sone also had mother. Absalom should hate Amnon to the death so that he should eventually kill it. And Radak says a point we'll get back to later, the Zamasa Yaonesh Govar Amasa Basheva Vuria. One of the punishments that David had to endure because of the Maitre Basheva. Okay. All this is very true, what the Rabbah says and what the Radak says, that she attacked him, she resisted, both verbally and physically, inflicting pain and a wound upon him. Or, that's Rabbah, like Radak says, he hated her in order to, it was the divinely inspired in order to provoke Absalom's rage. We'll see in a moment, Tamar pleads not to be ejected, but there's something else as well, of course. And that is the most intense hatred that people ever have, is self-hatred that's projected onto someone else. People loathe themselves, so, and you see that certainly with many of the killers in the world. It's not they hate their anonymous victims. They really hate themselves. And when they're attacking someone else, in effect, they're just transferring their anger towards themselves and their self-loathing to that other person. And actually, Amnon here, Amnon had his lust satisfied, but having listened to Tamar's argument that it's wrong, it's a nevuah b'Yisrael, and you'll be like one of the lowlives, when he did it, he realized that she was correct. That in fact, that's what he had become. And therefore, he hated himself for his own conduct. The she, who was now a reminder to him of his sin, was too painful to look at, even to relate to, much less to marry. That's what you find also, you know, in the modern world. A teenager gets pregnant, and they marry their lover, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old. What is the success rate for that marriage? Not too good. It's not too good. It doesn't endure long, because it comes from a different premise altogether. Now this case of Amnon and Tamar is a prototype familiar to us from Pirkei Avos in the fifth parak, Mishnah Tezayin, number 7 in the handout. Kol avor seituya b'davar, batel davar b'telo avor. any love which is dependent on something, once that something is nullified, the love is nullified along with it. But if it's independent, unconditional love, then that love never ends. A zoyaba tzliyah davar, what's the unconditional love? What is the conditional love of tzliyah davar? Zoyavas amnon v'tamar. That's the love of amnon v'tamar. V'she'ena tzliyah davar, zoyavas david v'yonasan. And that's not dependent on anything. That's the love of David and Yehonasan. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, it's interesting to understand the Mishnah from a number of perspectives. First, what's the chiddush here? What's the chiddush? Ava kitzli b'davar, a conditional love, to remove the condition, the love is gone too. Why is that a chiddush? Why is that so astounding? I mean, that would seem to be the obvious conclusion. Secondly, it's interesting that they're presented as the prototype of Ava Shena Tzliba Davar. Because the problem here is not Ava, the problem here is Reish. And the Chet was not just that's the real problem. It's not that they're symbols of an unconditional love. Where is the love? You don't even see that Tamar loves him. You don't even see that he necessarily loves her. He clearly lusted for her. But you don't see necessarily that he loves her. So what's the answer? You see that the chet here is not just a maisa. The chet of Amnon, and why this is a symbol of this type of malady, is a lack of self-control. The only problem that Amnon had was that he had to have her immediately. He could not wait. Tremendous problem in society, you know. Lack of self-control. People are able to maintain a sense of discipline about their lives. They'll get more often than not what they want. They have to go about it in a clever, proper way. But if they do not, and they try to seize what's not theirs, then in fact they run into all sorts of problems. One of our members gave me a t-shirt years ago that had on it a sign from Dennis Prager, the talk show host, that said on it, "We produce a better brand of citizen in this country if we worried less about our children's self-esteem and more about our children's self-control." Which is really true. We do a lot of things to build their self-esteem, but not much to instill in them a sense of discipline. Outside, by the way, our world, not that our children are free of problems, but you grow up in a halakhic system, is built in a sense of discipline. As every parent knows, you know, you go to the supermarket and you see kids screaming that their mothers for this candy, not that candy, and the mothers are screaming back, and there's a tug of war, but there's a way to avoid it in our case. Not kosher. Child here is not kosher, and it's the end of the story. They write, oh, not kosher, something else. Of course, if it's something that is kosher, you can't tell them it's not, but that's the end of the discussion. That sense of discipline is ingrained in our children from an early age. Not that they don't have other issues to deal with. They do, but it has to be done in any event. Tait once said that there are two parts to a sin, to a faith, as we know. There's instinctual desire, the yesara, which gives us the motivation for the faith. But every faith involves also a distortion of the mind, which tells the person that without this particular action, or deed, for acquisition, he cannot live. That he needs this particular situation in order to improve his life. And what that means is that the person talks it into himself that there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me that if I get this, I won't be in a better state. So it's the act. It's the external situation which has to be rectified and nothing within me. Once a person is convinced of this, that my happiness lies in getting that, there's really no stopping him, except of course the halacha. If a person is faithful to halacha, that will stop it. The very fascinating Gemara in Sanhedrin of Ayin Heyam and Aleph, it's not unfortunate to see, but as far as the case where the doctor said about a particular person that they said this person's going to die unless he sees this woman naked. And the Chacham said, Yomot, let him die. And the doctor said, all right, all he wants to do is speak with her behind the curtain in private. Don't even touch her. Speak with her. And the Rabbanim said, Yamut, let him die. What Amnon had here is a compulsion. Compulsion. And a compulsion can never be accommodated, because then it never ends. It just transfers itself from one object to the next object. You could say, I'm sure a creative postdoc would say, well, 1 second, to see a woman naked is asur. It's asur abonon. Pikuach nefesh. The doctor's saying, yes, he can't live without it. It's very well and good, but as the Gemara says, we don't demean the Benos Yisrael. So that's what it takes to keep him alive. Yummy. Let him die. That's what it is. How did Amnon overcome Tamar's very logical and compelling argument, which again attacked the act itself as degrading and claimed her own status as unworthy of this assault, and Amnon's status also as unworthy of being an assailant? As he said, in the language of the Torah, Lo tov teyos adam levado. It's not good for man to be alone. The Torah recognizes that people have certain needs too. People do have certain needs. And notice, I take credit for all seeing itself, but you don't see that the avos einot tui b'davar is general marriage between a husband and a wife, because that very often is totally on something. Something's a good thing. But it very often is totally on something. It's not purely unconditional. Romantic love is never purely unconditional, as much as we think it is, and as much as we might strive for that. In the example that he gave, that I once raised at one of the women's hearing here, that romantic love is not altruistic love. Because we each want certain things. Altruistic love would mean we only want what's best for the other person. Right? In which case, if a situation arose where you find someone that you think would be a better husband or better wife for your spouse, pure altruism would demand that you go to your spouse and say, you know what, I found a better person for you than me. But as those things never happen, it means that romantic love is not altruistic love. The love of David and Yonatan, as we discussed last year, that was a love that was based purely on the appreciation of the personality of the other. Without any reciprocity, expectation, it's just the appreciation of a beautiful fellow Elohim, a person created in the image of God, with the right values, like midos and a chacham. That's a different state entirely. The Torah recognizes that man has needs. The Gemara says, a person doesn't have a wife, sorry, below simcha, below bracha, below tov, etc. So once he said that he needed this and could not live without it, then the only problem becomes Nevola B'Yisrael, the political problem. How is he going to handle the fallout? So what did he assume? He assumed he would live with her, and then she would consent to marry him, and the king would arrange it. What did he not anticipate? The hatred that he would have. Because no one ever thinks they're subject to a compulsion. No one ever thinks so. This is who I am. These are my needs, legitimate needs. But once it was satisfied, then there was no end. And the hatred that he felt was really a self-hatred that was just projected onto her. Notice how plaintively she cries out to him. Back to one. But Tomelo, she said to him, as he said, get lost, Al odos haragdol azot me'acheres asher asisim l'tofeni. He says, don't do this greater evil than you've already done to me to send me away. The law of Olu Shmo'Allah, he didn't want to listen to her at all. What's the greater evil? Say, he has satisfied your love, but you did it from your perspective on the basis of this tremendous love that you felt for me, a desire to marry me. Now you'll have your way with me and throw me away? How could that be? He called his lads to come in, to take her out. Lock the door after her. The elect son is Pasim, Tichenko Basna, but also now Habsulos Miwim. She's wearing just a fine tunic, not a coat. Some say that she threw out, it's just a dress, not anything else. And the Benos Melech always wore finer outfits. They would say, oh, son is her soft. Who is the Noah, Bela Sachara? He tossed her out and locked the door after her. That was the hatred that he had now. But she cast Tamar Ephar or Shok, son of Hapasim Asher Alel. She took ashes, put it on her head, and on the, son of Kassim she wore, Kol Ra'ah, she tore, reflected, by the way, of this week's Sezer, by Esau, so back to it in a moment. But Tosem Yadal Roshel Vatelech Alohu Zvatah. She put her hand to her head, left, and she was crying. Now, we'll get to the aftermath in a little while. Amnon's problem, of course, is that people are always blind to the Tzvi V'Dovah. Because Tzvi V'Dovah means that they need something they don't have. It means somehow they are defective. So he thought he needed Tamar only for his satisfaction, and then he'd be happy as well. But Batel Dovah, Batel Ha'ava, the compulsion is such that the very attainment of the compulsion nullifies it, and everything dissipates. Now, if you look at number 8, the Rambam, on this mission of us, he says something very interesting. Teres Eilat Varam Tafu, to explain this Mishnah. Atoya Ve'a She'eilu Ashibot Hadashmios Yivatlu V'yosuru V'yishayesur Mishadesh V'su Shibotro. He says, these Gashmi things, that they're going to disappear. It can't be sustained. It can't be a legitimate cause, a permanent cause of anything. But if love is based on some divine, some metaphysical matter, a real connection of souls, then it's not going to dissipate at all. You note the Rambam's language, it seems he read the Mishnah differently. Ko'ava shifri b'dover botel. Ava, which is based on something which is botel. What's botel? Ephemeral emotions, compulsions, things. Something gossamy is going to dissipate and disappear. So if that's the case, then the tela ava, that ava is going to be nullified as well. It can't be sustained. And that, of course, we also know, a love that is created and sustained by nothing more than beauty or wealth or status. Once the beauty is gone, or the wealth is gone, or the status is gone, the betei la'ava. And even in terms of marriage, it has to be based on something that's more profound, more substantive, more significant than just surface. Surface issues. That's why you always question. As you see, in the world itself, is such a premium that's placed on appearances. It seems important too. But when appearances become the ikker, then the foundation for the marriage is not there. What's the outcome of this sorry event? So let's look back at the Gemara, number 11. First, this effected quite a change in Jewish life. We're about in the Gemara, we're about 6 lines from the bottom. But she cast Tamar Ephar or Sok, son of Sapashim Alkila, Korah, Tonam Ismail of Yeshub and Karcha, Geder Godo, Gidra Tamar Bosa Shah, Tamar and others made a fence at this time. They were able to enact a precautionary measure. Omru, Liznos Nilochen Ka, if this is what happens to princesses, that they can be attacked like this, it certainly can happen to commoners who are alone with men. In the Tznuosta, if this happens to chaste women like Tamar, it'll be even worse for those who aren't chaste. Omer Rav Yehuda Marav, Bosa Shah, Dozo, Yichel Ala Pnuya. At that time, there goes there the halacha of the yichud tnuya, that a man is not allowed to seclude himself with any woman, even an unmarried woman. See, there was no issur to seclude oneself with an unmarried woman, to theoretically the value too. Now, if the Yisrael Pnus, the Marshal Yisrael, the Raisu, it's the Raisu, what does it mean to give away now? Elaima, Gozra Yisrael Pnuya. The Yichud of a married woman, so that's always the Raisu. The Yichud of a Pnuya, that was the Gzera that emerged as a result of this case. Rashi says in 12, Yidra Tamar Begimoso Bezakoso, to her tears and her cries, and she presented herself in a degraded way to make the point. So the women themselves made the kalvachomer. If this abomination, this travesty, could happen to benos melachim, then Yosef Sachas comes to come. And the Rambam in Hilchos Yisur Dia, Terchav Beis Halacha Gimel, makes the same point. When this event happens, the David and the Sanhedrin would go there, Yichud Pnuya, the Acha Pi Shena Erva, the Chal Yichud Arayasi. Even though it's not an Erva Daraisa. Nonetheless, the Yichud Pnuya came into existence. That's the first effect. Now, something else happened as well. Let's go to a different point. Look at number 15. This is of Ariel in the Oz Melech. Very interesting comparison between Otsukim here and I said you this week. Because we have a similar event. Not just the Ksonis Tashin that Tamar wore and that Yosef wore, but note the similarity in language. There's a whole school of thought to that. They love darshaning a symmetry of expression from one person, Tanakh, to another. I don't even indulge in myself, but here you have it. It's a nice idea to entertain. He found it impossible to do anything. What did Yosef say to the Saramashim about Potiphar's wife? Vigampolo asisi mu'uma. Same language. Amnon said, Boi shichvi mi'achosi. Potiphar's wife said, grab his clothing, shichvoi me. Amnon said, Hotsu kolish me'alav, v'yitsu kolish me'alav, send everyone else, he wanted a raper. Yosef said the same thing. But when he said it to send everyone out when he revealed his identity to his brothers. Hotsu kolish me'alav. I will go tarab gola zos. Tamar said, Yosef said to Potiphar's wife, V'eich eseh harag do hazot. V'chuli v'chuli, you see in the other phrases also. Such a symmetry of language between the case here and the events in our Sedra. What's the connection? If you look at 18 of Ariel, it sounds on it. Amnon hamefater domeh leishes Potiphar. Amnon, the seducer, is similar to Potiphar's wife, who is a seducer. The Tamar, Domele Yosef. In Vayesev, Yosef is the victim. Here, Tamar is the victim. You look in the, except the Yosef escaped. Tamar did not escape. In both cases, the victim was punished. Yosef was imprisoned, and Tamar sat alone, as we'll see, in the house of Absalom. And now you see the great divergence, because although the superficial events are similar, that's why he needed it. There's also the antithesis here. Hotzikulis me'aloi of Yosef was in order to bring his family together, in order to heal the wounds in the family. Hotzikulis me'aloi of Amnon was in order to create a breach in the family, as well as a great breach. The Muta Shiburi. Master Yosef Neged Echob Nasu today with Karvom. With Karvom with a soul. Ula Vyom Pnimo. Yosef's actions at the end was to try to draw his brothers near, back into the fold. But Amnon sends Tamar out, discharges her, never wants to see her again. And notice as well that Yosef was the Bechor too, Bechor L'Rachel, and Amnon was the Bechor to David. But Yosef embraced his Bechora. Amnon rejected his Bechora. That's the contrast. Now, this, of course, reflects something else that happens. Let's go back to the text, the Navi in Pasuk Chos, and we'll see the immediate aftermath. Vayomer Eileh Avshalom Achiyo. Avshalom, who by the way did not like Amnon from the get-go, said to his sister, Ha'aminon Achiv Hayoimov. Was your brother Aminon, he uses a derisive term, was he with you? The answer, of course, is yes. And now, my sister, you be silent. He's your brother. Don't worry yourself over this matter. And Tamar lives devastated, desolate, in the house of Shalom, her brother. What was David's reaction? He heard what happened. He was very angry. What did he do? Nothing. The Malbim says in 9, the Melech David, 19, top left, the Melech David Chorolo Me'od Ulam Lo Chichov. He did not rebuke Amnon. The Chol Zeh Rer Sinas Avshalom. All this aroused Avshalom's enmity. Why did David say nothing? David was incapacitated. David is mourning over his own fate, and therefore, in effect, he left the door open to Absalom to act. Now this continues the payback, so to speak, the onus that David was told he was sustaining our battalion fourfold for what he did to Uriah and Bathsheba. And look at 17 as Rav Ariel makes the point. Absalom bolemet evelos of Tamar. So he, in fact, enlarges on her mourning, because now she's not fit, in one part because she's not fit to be a princess. He also stokes the flame. He uses his grievance in order to settle a score with Amnon. And he asks her, in this, he asked about the Amnon in that derisive way, about the Aminon, and then time marches on, and he lets his anger build, just waiting for the moment to strike. In any event, we'll get back to it in a second. Also, so David al Chayfat Sheva Bokan Nido Kenegan Nido. David's punishment, Bathsheba, came measure for measure in each respect. Five things he highlights. One, Hapam Pogim de Veto Pnimo. You are Yoko Sikhus Govan. You have, in fact, two, whatever David did, ostensibly, without the explanations we gave, Arroyos with Bathsheba and homicide with Uriah, it happened here too. Arroyos with Tamar and Absalom will kill Amnon. Now, in his household, in his family. There, David Atzmo Shalech at Tamar Vamono Asonom. Just like he was the instigator in his sorrow, he's the instigator here too. Amnon used his father to bring Tamar to him. Third, Amnon Zoreis at Tamar Vitalvo Toki will gaspach him. He's boastful. He's haughty. The crown prince. Sarek Kamelech Latida Kol Mutalo. The king can take anything. Tells his. He already sees himself as the Peter king, like his father. David took. Look at what the Navi says in Ancient Uriah. He did it. I could do it too. Amnon, Sema Aminud, Bogei Bachoto. Amnon, Amen, means verification, loyalty, confirmation. He betrays his sister. Like David, who in fact had betrayed one of his leading officers. Amnon alech lebal chatzor, v'shishur David nachnit hachnu l'dob arayod, v'yach yiti aferim shibro shol David el moto. And just like David sent Amnon to his death, sent Uriah to his death, so too, David, in next parak, sends Amnon to his death as well, to bal chatzor. All midah k'neged midah. What did Amnon do? So look at number 20. This is the old Sefer Musa, one of the oldest we have. Sefer Tikkun Mido Hanefesh, written by the Shlomo Ibn Gabiro, the famous Titan from 11th century Spain. He speaks about love, but not love, romantic love, love is lust. He says, this Mido Sa'ava Nobody can escape it. We all have compulsions for something. We all lust for different things. The only one who can escape is Misha Shichlo Moshe B'Tivel, a person whose intellect controls, rules his desires. V'zeh Nimtzo Me'at. And that happens very infrequently. And when it does happen, then one has to be constantly vigilant. And he says a person who gives in to the Midah in any event, any situation, he's going to destroy himself. And he mentions Maisud, Amon and Tamar. We see what happens to uncontrolled lust. Ach, Tzarich HaDam L'Snahei B'Midah Zor Chavara Selakov HaTarashah. The only area in which lust is permissible is when it comes to Vodas Hashem. And it comes to Talmud Torah. A person who's involved in Chochma Musar, that itself will separate between him and his illicit desires. In fact, what happened to Amnon? Look at number 21. Because the next prophet says, 2 years went by before Absalom did anything. Yerushalmi says in Sota, the third parak, Yeh Chus Torah stays on him. The schus of Talmud Torah can protect people, even sinners. It protected Amnon. As Yerushalmi said, 2 years he got a reprieve. The Cholosim stay strong, they also offered the Torah. For 2 years, Amnon was involved in Torah. Meaning, strange enough as it sounds, but the whole story is strange, what did Amnon do after this despicable act? He ran to the Beit Medrash. And he spent the next 2 years there because he realized on some level how much he had fallen. Soon enough, though, the end would come. Even the Biro said that the Chacham, the true Chacham, is a person who's moderate, a person who's disciplined. Whenever we have passion that's misplaced outside the realm of Torah, others be misplaced in Torah also, but outside the realm of Talmud Torah, so it's always trouble. He sought refuge in Torah, but Absalom was neither afraid, nor was he impressed. And the next parak, he masterminds the murder of Amnon, and then the next chapter in David's life begins. Once Absalom kills Amnon, Absalom then takes flight. And David spends time chasing him, trying to bring him back. He's rebellious. In the end, he's lost as well. But that is the next chapter. After this parsha, so it's a lesson about compulsions, about lust, about parents. Because we see, as Ariel made the point so clearly, what Amnon did, in essence, was not much different from what David did. Amnon, in fact, learned from David that these things, maybe they should not be done, so the consequences of their being done are very small. And therefore, he acted. A good reminder to parents that whatever we do, our children pick up on very, very readily. And they learn from all our deeds, and they're able to read our thoughts, and even our nuances. And if it happens with Amnon and David, it certainly happens with us. And therefore, the lesson not only that the Melucha Yisrael, but it's a message about every house in this area. Okay. Thank you. Next week.